But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
As we know, the championship kicked off last Sunday in Ballybuffet, Derry and Donegal. So we have four more games this weekend. Feels like it's really hotting up. The two big ones, obviously, are in Ulster. And there's a bit of news, Gerard, this weekend that the Connacht final has gone to Croke Park. You know, there's 18,000 in Croke Park this weekend for a doubleheader. There's talk now the Connacht final, well, this is a fact that it's going to Croke Park, 18,000. The Ulster final looks like it's going to go to Croke Park, 18,000 as well. Great news all around, I suppose. And like often the GAA are given out to for, you know, bringing it to Croke Park to make money. It doesn't look like they're going to make money out of 18,000. They're just doing the right thing and allowing a lot more supporters go see the matches.
No, I think it's very exciting, and it brings a sense of normality back to, you know, the Gaelic games and the Gaelic world. And it gives families an opportunity to scramble for tickets and pack the flask and the Sambos and drive up to Dublin and enjoy that experience and create a few memories before kids go back to school in September and everything else. So I think it's a great thing that the GAA are doing, and hopefully the Ulster final will probably come down then as well, and we'll get two good occasions out of
it,
you know.
Yeah, it definitely will. It's not unprecedented for the Ulster final to go to Croke Park, Brendan. You've first hand experience in this. Not a good experience in 2004, it has to be said. Hammered by our man Croker, 3:15 to 1:11. But I'll read you a little bit of the match report that I read on this one. Brendan Devaney was one of the few positives for Donegal would take from the first half. He consistently won his duels with Enda McNulty, and the many free kicks he earned suggested that Armagh's blanket defence was not totally impenetrable. They were calling Armagh's defence blanket defence back then. Little did they know, Brendan, what was to come 7 years later, a real blanket.
Two right. Well, geez, one good half, and that's a good starting point. As soon as you mentioned Ulster final, well, you didn't have to say anything else. I knew it was going to be a hard luck story or in that case, a hammering. But yeah, taking it to Croke Park was something special back then. Like, I know the 18,000 thing. I'm just Croke Park and 18,000. Listen, we all know what that looks like, really. I wonder would it be better 18,000 in a different ground to actually create the atmosphere, because I know what you're saying. I think it's about 30,000 to 35,000 before Croke Park even break even.
That's what they say, something like that. Yeah.
Something around that, right? So, I mean, as we know, Willie, the amount of games we've seen there with low crowds, I'm not too sure about the thinking behind that, because 18,000 in a 20,000, whatever, 25,000, 40, then again, obviously, space is the one.
Yeah, you won't get that, you see.
Listen, if we could find some way of doing that, Willie, because we've seen grounds before. I mean, what exactly, I mean, 18,000 in an 80,000 stadium, I don't understand how much space you actually need. You know what I mean? Surely if it was Croke Park, you could have 40,000 in it, at least.
Yeah.
Because I just wonder about, I know what you're saying about coming back, but atmosphere with 18,000 in Croke Park, I wouldn't be too sure of. And I wish it was 18,000 there that day that our math helped us.
Yeah, well, the problem with this is that obviously 18,000 is allowed in Croke Park. It wouldn't be allowed in a smaller ground.
Yeah.
And listen, don't get me started on 18,000. I completely agree with you. It should easily be 40,000 to 50,000 in Croke Park at this stage. But we know how conservative they all are. But I think since we're so used to no one at a game, like, I mean, you're seeing 5,000 at a match now and you're hearing an atmosphere and it's like, wow, you know, the hits are cheered, the points are cheered. You will notice 18,000. Normally you wouldn't. I've played in Croke Park with 20,000 and it's desperate altogether.
Yeah, I remember 2010, we conceded 5 goals to Meath in the Leinster final.
It's on the Hill 16 that day.
Yeah, and
cheering Keane Ward. Cheering Keane Ward at the end.
Jeez, they were good that day, Meade. They got a try in the final with Joe Sheridan against Loud. But we played Tipperary in the qualifiers in Croke Park. And I remember at one stage, and it was a brutal game. The attendance came up on the big screen and it was such a brutal game and atmosphere. I actually had time to look up and it was like 21,000 and whatever people had come into it. And it was such a dead atmosphere. But no, I think we got a sense of what the crowds bring.
You got a sense of what the Colchis have to deal with.
What the Colchis have to deal with, yeah. But saying this, at the latter stages, this, year's league or the couple of championship games up north at six counties, you know, we put a few bodies in there, like, it definitely added a bit of a buzz to the whole occasion. And I think certainly for players, when you know your family's in watching you as well, it definitely does help you raise your performance, I think, as well. And I think that kind of transfers onto the pitch. But Croke Park, big place, 18,000 people, it might look a bit lost, but look at, I think we have to take what we're given how conservative that effort and the government have been. You
seem
know?
To be, yeah, definitely. The Mayo are obviously giving up home advantage, Brendan. Like, I mean, they're looking at this. Castle Bar can only hold 3,500. It's nothing to do with the supporters, I'd say, with James Horan. It would be more get some Croker experience into some of these young lads. You know, like, I mean, we complain about Dublin's advantage playing there so often. Like, do you think Ulster teams, Connacht teams, you couldn't really play the Munster final there, there'd be 2,000 at it. Neither Cork or Kerry would bother coming up, I suppose. But, like, I mean, is there an argument to be made? It's the national stadium, it's a provincial final, play them all there every year.
Yeah, well, I think in the boom time there was an argument. You know, you've seen some big Ulster clashes there that were close to being sellouts, you know, particularly, yeah. I suppose at that time Armagh and Tyrone to the big rivalry. I think around those times, if they played Ulster finals there, it would be packed. And there was huge crowds there regardless. And you're right, I think for Mayo, they're probably looking at this Galway team and thinking, we have that Croke Park experience and outside of finals, so they do win most of their games at Croke Park. So you're right, yeah, a great experience if they're thinking about, you know, you have a semi-final coming up and again, everybody likes that bit of a rhythm around going to Croke Park and taking the pressure out of it. You know, Willie, from when you first played there and that, there's a real tension about Croke Park. And then as the years went on, because we were allowed on, did more in backdoor games, that was lessened and lessened. And you could start to enjoy it. And it was something special. I mean, that day we went up in 2004, you mentioned there. That was the first day the Ulster Council had taken charge of it. And it was up to them to do all the arrangements, but they forgot to put on a bit of food for us. So I remember after the match, we left on the bus and there was no grub, nothing was organised. So we got on the bus, there's a couple of dodgy heated sandwiches lying about or a couple of soggy Jaffa cakes. So we got on the bus and of course all the traffic was coming down the road. We were going the cabin way, the south of Donegal. And these lads were, you know, they hadn't eaten since, say, breakfast that morning, 8:30, whatever. And this was maybe now, say, 4 or 5 o'clock. So we stopped in Virginia for food and some of the lads just went down to the bar. And in Donegal times, this was going to be a recipe for disaster. So we come out. I remember we came out of the bar then. The county board was buying a few crates of beer for us. They must have felt sorry for us. And when the lads seen that, they went all in buying spirits. So we're in this bus coming back. Some of them hadn't even eaten at this stage, heading to a very somber Donegal town. Boys at this stage were drinking pints of vodka Red Bull in the bus. This bus was going to explode out under the Abbey. Of course, everybody's like, look at these crowd of like, because once the hooch went down, well, you know, everything went out the window. And I suppose it's hard to put in context now because it's so anti-drink, you know. I feel even awkward even talking about it, you know. Maybe we should have a different section of the show, will you? Me, you and Jer go for 5 or 6 pints and we can tell these stories properly. But well, you see that night, for example, there was supposed to be rooms back in the hotel because we had lost, everything was cancelled. So regular Donegal lads, because Donegal is such a big county, we're in the sauce end out in Donegal town Sunday night, and then the boys ended up sleeping in the foyer in that. So when they got up the next day, it was straight on the Raz, and then of course out comes all the stories and the messing and the carry on. But I suppose that's the times it was in it.
You went out and lost to Fermanagh then in the qualifiers. So, like, I mean, that's true to Donegal form. But amazingly, Fermanagh went down to Croke Park and then beat Armagh in 2004. So what a weird year that was.
Did they get to the All-Ireland semi-final?
Yeah, Mayo beat them after a replay. Yeah. Didn't go too well for Mayo in the final then. So, like, I mean, that was a bit of a crazy... Armagh really be kicking themselves that year, losing to Fermanagh in that. Come here, what's going on with the Dublin crisis, Ger? It's getting deeper and deeper as the weeks go on. We have Paul Mannion gone, we have Jack McCaffrey gone, we have Stephen Cluxton playing cat and mouse with Desi Farrell, and now we have a stalwart of the panel, Eric Lowndes, gone. Apparently he's gone teaching in Dubai.
It's unsettling when you have so many people coming out.
Unusual, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you know, nobody probably wants to go when a new manager comes in, and maybe just after the first year the lads have to win another All-Ireland. Eric was there when I was there, a very, very committed, talented guy. Struggled to kind of nail down a place in the first 15, but he got an awful lot of game time during his career, and that probably dried up maybe in the latter stages, even though we still did see a couple of minutes this year. But you know, when you look at the level of commitment that we've spoken about that goes into it, and the fact he's won what he's won, and he's probably coming closer to 30, and then you're thinking of, do you know, I don't have a bob in my pocket, and you're thinking about getting a mortgage or getting engaged or whatever he's doing. That
he could sell the sponsored car, maybe.
I need to do something. Yeah, you have to give that back, and then you have to pay for your own petrol and your own taxes.
It's a huge decision to actually leave the Dublin panel and added on extras that you're handing back.
It is actually when you think about it. Now, I don't know whether Eric has one of the sponsored cars. Now, there wasn't one for everyone in the audience, but
where did they cut that off? Starting 15.
I'd say probably starting 15 or whoever the highest profile guy is, to be honest. But in fairness to when it kind of kicked off with certainly Pat Gilroy, where with kind of Renault kind of came in and sponsored a few, was in fairness to Pat, lads who were under pressure maybe with family or work, they were actually looked after as well. So it was fairly.
So they don't do individual deals, they do a squad deal, is that how
squad
they...
deals, yeah. So I get an plug in for
Leonieri. I heard years ago whenever the car deal came in that a load of lads had the cars already.
Yeah.
And then the cars were given out, so subs got cars and that. I just wondered, Molly, what sponsorship did anybody ever single you out in the lease for sponsorship?
No, I've made several pleas on this show for a sponsored car, and nobody's biting at all. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's very, very frustrating. I want that sponsored car.
Yeah, I
have no problem. I'll tweet every day about the picture of this car and me sitting on the top of it. It's no problem with me. I sit on the bonnet. I lie in front of it.
Whatever you want, just give it to me.
Just not happening for me, Ger.
There was Brian Cullen would have under Peter Caffrey. Brian had a local dealership with Leo Neary, who now does sponsor the team. Lovely guy Leo from St. Pat's Lusk GA club there, and Brian Cullen was the only one I can really remember actually who kind of had an individual deal. I was getting the train. Dave Billings, Lord rest him, organised a bus pass and a train pass for me coming in for Maynooth to get the training, and he did that for a lot of lads, in fairness to Davey.
Did the money start coming in? The All-Ireland win 2011, everything changed, was it? That the cars started?
The start of 2011 was when sponsorship deals started coming in. What's his name? Probably Renault. Bill Cullen, Renault. And I had a 99D Polo, right? And I was living up in a house in Navan Road near Cabra, and it was a real cold winter that 2010, and I was teaching in my old school, Belvedere College, but the locks froze on me, right? So I had to leave the door open the whole time because I'd been using the kettle to try to defrost the locks to get the key in, right? So for about 6 or 7 months, I was driving a car with it was open the whole time, so we left nothing valuable in it. And then we got a deal in January with Bill Cullen Motors up on Airside in Swords. And I was driving out of the show, the courtyard, with 11 kilometres on a brand new Renault Fluence. And I had to drive out through the glass, like, you know, from inside the building. I was shitting myself, like, you know, I was only getting my full licence as well. It was great, though. It was only 23 or 4. Like, it was brilliant.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean? I didn't have any money, like, but...
So then when you finished then, did you have to hand keys back? And, like, I mean, you leave the WhatsApp group and you have to hand the keys back. What else? Well, suppose that would probably...
Well, you went up to the dealer and say, give us a deal on a car.
Continue it on. What if when you retire, though? Could you say, are you keeping me on? He's there like, no, mate, you've retired now. Hand it back, give it back.
I probably didn't ask that. I probably should have asked, but depending on the profile, like, you know.
Yeah.
Other lads can command that level of partnership.
Yeah, Paul Galvin's still driving an Audi in his retired years.
In his retired years. So, yeah, it depends on the profile, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
But,
I think Kieran Donaghy had a big Jeep there one day as well, did it?
Yeah, maybe he did. Mm. A lot of them, Reynolds sponsor a lot of them. It's a weird one with Dublin, to get back to the football here, lads. I'm curious about all this stuff. Kevin McManaman, he's performance coach for the Irish boxing team or something.
Yeah.
Has he gone off the panel too? Like, I mean, there's a lot going on in that Dublin panel. We'll talk about the game against Meath in part two.
There's an awful lot of change happening, and it's something that would unsettle me as obviously a former player and watching in at the lacklustre Wexford performance. Obviously we won, but when you have so many moving parts and they're all going in the one direction with Rattori Rees and fellas stepping away, it's an extra thing that the manager has to take care of, and he has to keep the guys who are there singing from the one hymn sheet, and he has to control the narrative or control the story, and it's definitely a challenge for Desi now going forward, and that's why I'm interested to see how they turn up, what sort of shape our lads turn up in Croke Park the weekend against Meath, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it is unsettling, it is unnerving, you know.
Yeah. And now that you mention free stuff, Brendan, once upon a time I got a pair of free glasses, Oakleys. I think you got them as well now, as memory serves me correctly. So they remember, yeah. Remember the time Edgar Davids mm-hmm. wore the ones with the strap?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to kick this off in the GAA. I don't know why, but the deal was that to promote these, you had to wear these in a championship match.
She'd get the head boxed off.
Well, that's it. I wore them training a couple of nights, and I remember Colin Brown was the manager, and like, I mean, it was just a bit farcical that I was going around with I wouldn't do it to the team, yeah. You know what I mean? You couldn't do it. Even the uncomfortable feeling wearing them at training was enough for me. I just had to say no.
I wore them too, Willie. It was mad. They landed into Ireland and they just planned to go to a couple of players, Willie, with what they called attitude. Funny, Willie, me and you was in that lesson, here we are, but anyway. McDonald from Mayo was the other one. I met Kieran one day, and I was like, Kieran, the blonde hair, and you could nearly get away with him, you know. But I wore them DJing one night back in the day. I used to mess about DJing. Like, these were mad things.
They were.
And when I wore them in, people was like, what's this fuck up here? I was messing with them on. But I wore them to training one night, and listen, only in about half an hour. It was hilarious stuff, you know. But they reckoned that it would help with the sunlight and different things if you were shooting and what have you. I said to your man, I said, listen, if I had Man of the Match, if I knew I was going to star, I says, I nearly would chance it. I said, but see, for a bit of Oakley gear, nah, not worth it, man. You'd get killed. You know what I mean? It's GAA at the end of the day. You know?
Yeah, no, definitely. It would be a nice picture to look back on, though, with the Edgar Davids glasses on.
And a funny one then as well, only as you're talking with that, a guy from Under Armour came into his restroom with him years ago, and he was pushing the lower mouth guard for when you were doing weights, and he was a real salesman, you know, and he says, right lads, the research now from the US says that you can do an extra 4 chin-ups if you have the lower mouth guard in.
What, because to bite on?
Because you bite on and you're producing cortisol, right? And I'm saying to myself here, because we were only being introduced to how to do chin-ups, and you know when you're struggling with chin-ups and you're climbing the wall and your legs are going up in the air and you can't kick anything.
You bring your knees up to your chest.
So we some crack. So we all got a fucking lower mouth guard, and it was the biggest fad ever, I say it lasted. There was a few lads now wearing them the whole time, and I was like, here, will you take that off?
Talking about the fad, I wore the Robbie Fowler thing on your nose to open up your nose to breathe. and that made no difference.
There's a picture come up there about, I think we beat Cavan in 98. They were Ulster champions. That was my second championship game, but I'm missing from the team picture, and they couldn't get the thing to stick. I started to sweat.
You were sweating, yeah.
So I'm in the dugout. They're trying to put this bloody nose. I'm not in the picture. Somebody said, where the hell were you at? That's where I was.
It's absolutely, yeah, all this kind of nonsense. That was just copying a fad. They didn't work. They did not work. I just thought they looked a little bit different or whatever, sure.
Fowler used to have it,
yeah, Fowler kind of kicked that off. I went through a phase of wearing sweatbands on my wrist. They had no real function either, other than kind of, you know, looking kind of cool. Come here, we're talking about Cluxton a good bit in the last couple of weeks. We're not going to talk about him here, but I thought this was a funny one. Conor McKeown had a piece on Cluxton in The Independent, a good one, about his hate for journalists, which I thought was funny. There was a lot of stuff in it I didn't know, but there was a little anecdote about it that I'd heard before about Jack McCaffrey. You would have been there for this when he landed the training in a Cork jersey, and Cluxton went up to him and says, hi, I'm Stephen Cluxton, welcome aboard, now don't wear that fucking thing down here again, right?
Yeah.
Which, when I read it, I went, Jesus, that's lousy by Cluxton. What's his problem? And then I start, because that's only because of what I would have remembered. When I went training in the 90s and 2000s, it was just a mix match of all swapped gear and all different jerseys from, and you know, yeah, you rotated them. But then I was thinking Dublin would have training gear.
Yeah.
So Jack would have looked out of place in a Cork jersey. It would have looked wrong in the squad. So then I was thinking Cluxton was dead right to say that to him.
Well, you know, he was really the way the culture was kind of growing. And when I started, Pillar Caffrey was manager, and I went in with a Cork jersey as well. We'd lost our Bet Cork in a minor All-Ireland semi-final, and I wore a Cork jersey, and Johnny McGee came over and says, take the fucking thing off, like, you know.
Really?
So I was, oh, yeah. But at that stage, I literally was only in the door, so I didn't really have any gear bar, the odd bit you get for the minors. And Jack was actually in the same boat. He literally just come walk through the door. But that was the norm, isn't it? You kind of wore whatever you want. But yeah.
It was like a fashion parade of who had the nicest jersey from another county, Brendan, where I was. But I completely understand the culture of not wearing them, you know, almost disrespecting them, and we're wearing our own training stuff.
I thought the county jersey was always too heavy. I didn't really like them.
Yeah, in the summer.
I remember back the time, going back to 98 again, we had no bubs at Donegal this night, and there was a corner back there. I'll tell you a type of mate, he would have done a hard training session on Tuesday night, threw the jersey in the bag, and just took it out and put it on the Thursday night.
Smell of
it. So we, at the time, you know the way you used to swap to get the colours? So I had to swap with him. Honest to God, I pulled this to my head. This thing, is, as my wee lad Lucas would say, was honking. I mean, it was alive. I couldn't put it on, right? I couldn't get it over my head, so I just says, I'll go with the skins, you know. But the same guy was a good-looking guy. No bother with the chicks, you know, so he must have put the aftershave on for the weekend.
Come here, do Dublin just go to training with a pair of boots?
I seen that in your show notes. That never happened in my time.
Really?
No.
I thought all their laundry was done for it. This makes sense. It's very professional, obviously, but it would take all that. Jesus, during the winter, you know, there's a lot of gear to get through and wash.
I can only remember briefly there was talk of it with I think maybe when Pillar was there, but just getting your towel washed or something like that.
Right.
But in terms of your gear, I think it's important that you mind your own gear and you prepare, come with the training, and it gets you into the zone, and you look after it and you mind, you know, and that helps kind of makes you think elite as well, you know. But no, I don't, unless it's changed in the last 4 or 5 years since I'm gone, but I'm surprised if that is the case, you know. You got to wash your own gear, you know. Well, bring it home to mommy the weekend, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, when you're living on your own, it is a lot. Like, if you're training 3 times a week in the winter, you've got 3 layers that are destroyed 3 times a week.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you always see the professional soccer players, Brendan, just walking into matches and they're all just carrying a pair of boots. Like, I think it's a huge, obviously, if it was workable, you'd only have to, like, do a deal with a local laundry company and just have the same gear washed and ready, you know, your socks, togs, top, jumper, whatever, and is ready sitting there waiting for you when you come in the next night.
Yeah. Listen, a few of the soccer teams that play actually had a bit of that going on, you know, that they would, all the gear would be there for you and different things. I remember actually playing with them in the Valley. Tommy Wright was the manager. He was in nets for the famous Alan McLaughlin goal, but he played for Man City and got us all Man City gear. So gear was great, yeah, at the time. I remember Declan Bonner actually in his first stint there with Donegal, rearing up and everybody. We went a bit steel the next year, and his argument was that lads are just hanging about in the squad to get a bit of free gear. And I remember sitting there at the time, I would have been into my sports gear, and Donegal gear was absolute crap. And I was thinking to myself, hanging about for this and stuff, you know what I mean? Good luck to you. I know it's come on a lot, but it was dodgy freaking gear back then.
I think the gear was always horrible, but the couple of pairs of boots you'd get, that was a nice little bonus.
Yeah, and look, the boots were needed then as well. Well, one of the other colleges now, I won't say who it is, but they were struggling to get a couple of numbers out for freshers there a couple of seasons ago, and one of the lads involved with them, he just put up a made-up message saying, right lads, we're giving out the gear tonight for the year. If you're not there, you're not getting it. He said, you have 40 lads there. They're like, where's the gear? He says, we don't have any bloody gear. He says, just turn up training. Says,
It's amazing how players, especially club players, appreciate the free gear so much.
They'll
be wearing that club t-shirt out that night following weekend. They just love a bit of free gear. But it's like being in a pub and getting a free pint. You're delighted with this free pint.
Yeah, no, it's great. And Keith Ricken is head of GA in Cork IT, and he's managing the under 20 footballers in Cork this year, and he won the All-Ireland a few years ago. But he talked to the 3 G's, you know, which was gear, gear, grub and girls. That's what he talked about, yeah.
That's
all the young lads want, you know. So certainly when you're in college, when you haven't got €2 in your pocket, like, you know, it's make ends meet. So the bit of grub or the bit of gear brought you a long way, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. Right, well, listen, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll have to start talking about the matches at some stage. Okay, so we'll look at the big one of the weekend, which is obviously Donegal versus Tyrone in this part, and then we'll look at the other three games in part three. I want to start off here, Brendan, with, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this quote, but I thought it kind of summed up the Tyrone attitude towards Donegal. It's Brian Duher who would have, you know, beaten Donegal routinely, probably, in, you know, in his career. Not probably, he did. This is the quote. He says, Donegal are potentially one of the top teams in the country. Like, I love that. Like, Donegal, for me, are one of the top teams in the country. But Brian Duher is saying they have the potential to be one of the top teams in the country. Am I reading too much into that harmless quote, or is it not harmless?
Listen, Duher's not a media man. Listen, I can actually, there's some merit in what he's saying around Donegal have the potential to play at a level, and in many ways there's parts of their team and parts of their performance can drop to a level which is outside of the top team. So yeah. Actually it's not a bad statement in some ways, but yeah, I know between Fergal and Brian, you know, definitely Brian, you know, would be one of those guys, he keeps a head down and just does his thing. So I would say on the spot, you know, whatever comes under his head, I would take with a pinch of salt, you know what I mean? But listen, there's probably something in that as well, Willie. If you look at, like, Tyrone there, the last five times Donegal have played them, Tyrone had won three in a row up in the last two. Donegal have won the two of them, so it's flipped over. They've also won the last couple of league games there. So Donegal begin to kind of have a bit of a thing over Tyrone. So the new management then, and this group of players, and somewhat of a new style after the huge era of Hart, this is probably, for me, a bigger game for Tyrone than Donegal, because there's going to be some questions asked if they're beaten, particularly after the Mull in Killarney. You know, they beat Cavan, you know, that's routine, it's supposed to happen. They played well. Listen, I was in Healy Park on Saturday night. It was a good performance, a very good squad performance, which is encouraging for Tyrone. But certainly if Donegal were to beat them now, there's going to be huge questions asked of them. That, where they get over Donegal, they've won the Ulster finals as favourites and they'll be on up and up. So I think it's a bigger game for them than Donegal.
Yeah, you could probably make the case that it's a bigger game for Donegal too, though, because I'd say Bonner and Rochford will be gone if they lose, you know, whereas yeah. Logan and Duher would be given a bit, maybe forgiven it being their first year. Brian Duher, all the Tyrone lads are saying the same, similar thing after the Cavan game, and that's their new kicking game. I don't know why they're overdoing this, because this is Donegal going to be, you know, reading this. And it was obvious that they were looking for McCurry an awful lot and stuff. And Brian Duher says, we weren't going to go with six forwards up the field. We still kept our attacking shape up there. So whenever we got the ball, we had an outlet. I think that's important too. And Darren McCurry said, I think our kick passing was up to scratch and we created a lot of chances and there was a lot of movement. Definitely we've been working on that a lot in training. And like, I mean, I talked about this last time. They came against Donegal 2 years ago in Breffni Park with a kicking game. And what did Donegal do? They messed up the kicking game by dropping two sweepers back in front of Cathal McShane. Like, if Tyrone are going to be very obvious that this is their new game plan, like, it's very easy to stop a kicking game. Tipperary did it to Kerry, to put two sweepers there. Do you know what I mean? Tyrone definitely need to move to a kicking game, but they also need to not forget that patient game, you know, that we talk about a lot on the show.
See, with Duher and Fergal in there, they're trying to bring about a new way of playing. And you do need, again, a plan A and a plan B. And you need to be able to kind of evolve your attack and where the kick pass is on. If that's the style of football you're playing, well, then you kick it in. But if you're the man in possession and you can identify that, right, these have two or three fellas back there, no point in kicking it in. We're going to have to work the ball through the hands. Now, we didn't necessarily see that from Tyrone the weekend because they didn't have to do that. But I think they will be asked questions. Donegal will set up, as you described, Willie, that they'll cut out those pockets of space, which McCurry picked up an awful lot of ball. McShane, when he came on, kicked two or three points as well. Kick pass into space. So they won't get those opportunities the weekend. The other side of it then is, from a Donegal point of view, if they put a higher press out the field, the quality of the ball coming in isn't going to be as good. And if you do turn them over up there, your chances of getting the goal are far greater as opposed to turning them over in your own defence. But I can't see Donegal doing that, to be honest, like, you know. But it is early doors for Duher and Fergal. What's his surname, sort of the joint manager?
Fergal Logan.
Fergal Logan. I'd agree with Woolley, Brendan, that I think there's more pressure on your management to get over the line here, because they're in their year three or four at this stage. So whereas the two boys in Tyrone are just kind of getting to cut their teeth and getting to find out who the personnel are that they want to use, and a couple of guys come back from injury then as well, you know. So
yeah, can you see Donegal going pretty defensive, Brendan, even going back there waiting for Tyrone like they did in Breffni Park that night?
Yeah. Listen, just going back to the thing, Donegal, obviously this team and that management have won a couple also, should have really won three in a row. Donegal's big problem is get to a semi-final. It's not at that point yet, and I think that's been the stumbling block for them. That's why I'm saying for Tyrone, you know, to get back in and win in Ulster, at this point is a bit larger for me than Donegal. But Donegal's tactics, Willie, I couldn't believe at the weekend there, and I couldn't believe some of the comments about it, actually, about the two teams are playing similar. From the analysis from RTE and that, you know, listen, the two teams weren't playing similar. Derry were playing complete and utter blanket defence, 15 inside the 45, rigid defence, hadn't done a goal on the counter. And for some reason, I thought this would get sorted in the first water break. The only way to play that is to mirror. We've seen it time and time again. It would make a complete disaster of the game. It was funny how excited people got about the game, Willie, and how much that football has moved into a different zone. Like, even Pat Blam was bouncing about, you know. I thought he'd suddenly put a shot or something on him. He was going nuts. And I was like, this is blanket defence. You know what I mean? Fair enough, there was some brilliant points taken, but that's blanket defence is forced in. But it still was very horrible keep ball at times. Now, don't get me wrong, tension, excitement, all that, it had it, Willie, but it was still out and out blanket defence. The difference with Donegal is Donegal were engaging Tyrone, or engaging Derry at different places around the pitch, and they didn't drop into the 45, which they needed to do. So as they approached the Derry attack round about, say, the 60 or around that, if Derry got one man beyond that, next thing the 45 was opened up. And how many times did you see a simple hand pass inside and the good forwards, and our defenders were struggling one-on-one time and time and time again. Donegal get the ball, Derry drop completely right down, full team inside the 45, come ahead, what are you going to do? I mean, for some of the cabinet, they say about McBeardy, he was useless. Donegal, let's just take Donegal for example. When Donegal did this, the teams, full forwards didn't get the ball. Nobody got the ball.
No.
So your full forward's job there, and he's been backed by, say, Chrissy McCaig, if we're talking about it, who's a top-class defender. In fact, if you put McCaig and Rogers in the Donegal setup, Donegal could maybe have a proper tilt. But that said, well, to McBeardy then, he kicked his freeze, and he hits this absolutely wonder point. So you know, that is blanket defence. Well, you're not going to get opportunities. And for Donegal, it was very obvious. There was only three players, really, that were coming on the ball, were going to do the damage. And in Langan, McGonigal, and Rhea O'Donnell, who's man of the match, the three of them had to play out of their skins. And they did that, Willie. And, you know, just a small point on when you look at a one-point game, you have to look at every point and every missed opportunity and analyse it. Derry's three goal chances, they got no points out of it, which was huge. They're going to look to this and that. But there was a small thing I noticed just when Michael Murphy comes on, Donegal are four down. And Donegal get a point, go back to three. And then he comes out for a ball. And because the Derry players were all at him, the ref's watching this, he gets a very soft free, which pulls it back to two, which was absolutely vital. So it just shows you sometimes, Willie, you talk about being cute and being smart in the game. You've got to know how to play that. They actually made the ref's decision in his mind. I don't think it was a foul on Murphy. It was very, very soft. But it was done because the ref was watching all the abuse Murphy was getting when he came on. And that, in the end, was a small thing. It was Derry's undoing.
The league game between these two teams, Donegal won it in Omagh, both teams playing a lovely kicking game. Whether Donegal will allow that, or they might, I don't know, it's just that conservative nature coming out again. It'll be interesting to see how they approach it. This has the potential to be a good kicking game and a high scoring game, but I don't know. When it worked for Donegal two years ago, and with Tyrone being very focused on this kicking game, I don't know, I can see them talking about it, discussing it, and coming up with this conclusion, you know, that they might go a little bit defence. And especially as well, because the Donegal defence is, you know, there's question marks about it. And maybe they'd be worried. Why are they playing, one second, I'll ask you, Brendan, quickly this one. Why are they playing Owen McHugh in the backs? Like, when did this come about?
Listen, Bonner's talked about this, about just converting them back. Well, this goes back to just the issues of Donegal in defence. You know, listen, there's two defenders coming through for Donegal, Gillespie and Morrison, for me, that were proper full-back typey players. They both of them had cruciate, real, real double cruciate, I think, for Gillespie. Morrison's cruciate was even worse than the cruciate. He tore something else as well. So they're just back in training, trying to get back up. So Donegal are trying to if you fit the round pegs and the square holes kind of thing. But you've seen McHugh get ruled for a Derry point. Again, go back to the 1 point. You know, he's in the left corner. The forward rules him on the inside, which he just doesn't happen. You can't, that won't happen with a cornerback or a defender. So there's a few people questioning different guys in the squad and why his own back there. I think in that system, you'll get away with it, Willie, if you drop enough people back, right, that nobody's actually one-on-one. The problem is we don't go on Sundays. They were one-on-one, and one-on-one be good players. I mean, you talk about ingredients for teams to come up. Derry have the ingredients. You know, they have top club. They have brilliant second-level teams. They're always competing on the raids. They're in a minor final now. They've always got great sides. So everything is there in Derry to come back up. And what you've seen the last day, I think, be Rory Gallagher's tactics, and same what he did be Fermanagh. You've got to really buy in to be willing to bring the whole team back and then get the whole team forward constantly in the game. It's actually a real tough thing, I think, to buy into, because you're training and playing and training and playing. You really got to sacrifice your own game. But if you haven't had success, that's going to work. And if you look at just at the end of half-time, McGuigan got a shot in along the line. McMenamin got booked for it at the start of the second half. He was Derry's last man, basically, on that 50 line. Their star forward, the man that you need up around the opposition goals, that was him collecting a high ball inside. So I think it's a lot they asked. I don't think teams over time, and that's why maybe you've seen Donegal open up in this game. They're done with that full blanket defence. Whereas a team like Derry, they're going to do whatever Gallagher asks. And that's it. They have plenty of brilliant footballers as well. So I think it's probably that balance now. Tyrone and Donegal now is going to be a completely different game. Tyrone and Donegal will play quite similar. And what you'll have is quite similar battles that we had the last day. Tyrone's tactics coming in are huge, of course, and does McShane start. And there's word of McKenna and Canavan coming back. And listen, well, I've always said it, Tyrone have the best squad in Ulster. There's no doubt in that. 15 on 15, Donegal have had the better in the last couple of seasons. So that's why I think Tyrone are building up a bit of head of steam going into this one.
The shape, I'm potentially Donegal might, you know, go very, very defensive. Then again, the counter-attack game doesn't work like it used to. Even 2 years ago, teams are too clued into it. You might see two forwards. You have Dewar there talking about keeping their shape and allowing that out ball. I love all that talk, because I've been talking about this on the show for the last feckin' three, 4 years without seeing it. But it's very hard against Donegal to keep that shape, because Donegal attack with everyone, literally everyone. And I do take Brendan's point, McGuigan was back. But I was watching this a few times. Like, McMenamin's just running up the field. He's trying to follow him. And then when Derry get the ball, you see McGuigan legging it back up to his position to give them some shape. It's hard to keep, the point I'm making, it's very hard to keep a shape and keep 3 or 4 forwards up there to give that kick pass option against a team that just goes 15 of you when we're attacking. Go, everybody go.
There's an awful lot of material in what you said, Willie, and what Brendan said. I think the first thing for me, Donegal, what they did well was, and Brendan touched on it, they kind of mirrored Derry in that they weren't necessarily forcing the kick pass away, because Derry were getting balls back. A lot of Donegal's play went through the hands, because that's what they were faced with, because Derry were just disengaging an awful lot of the time. And that's something which obviously Donegal no doubt spoke about going into that game. But given the quality of footballers that they have and the Donegal team, and they're all well out to kick the ball, an awful lot of them in the middle eight of the pitch, if the opportunities are there to be kicked, I think they will kick the ball in the same way that we've seen against Tyrone, against Cavan. But for me, the quality of opposition for Donegal in comparison to the quality of opposition for Tyrone versus Cavan, I think it's going to have a huge bearing on the game for me. That Cavan were, for me, quite poor, quite porous, and didn't seem to have any kind of will to win. I think they were the season was over probably going into the game for them, after being relegated down to Division 4 as well. And I think it was all too easy for Tyrone in that particular game. Now, Dewar has always been involved, All-Ireland winning captain. The game has moved on from when he captained the team. Having the structure up front is obviously important, and having an outlet there. What we see in modern football a lot of the time is where you have everyone behind the ball, and the example that Brendan touched on as well, where you Shane McGuigan hanging around the 45 as an outlet. that when Derry were turning the ball back over, and Donegal did it as well, and you had Steve McMenamin getting ahead of the ball a couple of times just to lengthen the pitch and to create pockets, and that's what teams do when they are playing defensive. But when you have a guy in the outlet like Tyrone Kept, quite often that kick passes on. The Tyrone forward has to be disciplined enough to stay there, even if his marker takes a chance going forward, and you're just banking on your defence getting a turnover in, and then the quick kick passes on, and all of a sudden it's a goal opportunity, and then your man has to think twice about going again.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened last weekend with Derry Donegal was, because Donegal were chasing the game the whole time, I think pretty much to the very end, they weren't able to draw Derry out. But when if Derry were losing the game from the outset or chasing a few points going into the latter stages of the game, well, then they would have to step up, and then the pockets of space appear then for the kick pass. So the better players and the better teams are able to see what's happening and are able to evolve and adapt the pitch, and they're not so robotic that they can't that they stick to the one thing, you know.
Yeah, Brian Duer was talking about the pressure out the field. So he was talking about Tyrone's improvement, Brendan, and he said the defenders tightened up, but it was the pressure out the field, it was the tackle out the field that made the difference. And I've played on the full back line, and I've played in the half back line, I've played in the forwards, and always the message from the full back line is, put pressure on them, lads. If you put pressure on that kick, let them just give us a chance to get a fist in. Give us a chance. Get the pressure on them. Don't give them an easy kick or we're in trouble. Get pressure on them. Give us a chance in here. And that was always the message. So, like, I mean, I often scratch my head about this, right? So, like, I mean, you're dropping loads of players back and you're giving no pressure on a kick, right? You're actually not pressurising teams. Why do teams hand pass more than kick pass? Because kick passing is much more risky than hand passing. Hand passing is guaranteed possession. Kick passing, especially with pressure on, is less than that. So why not just pressure them all over the field, leave no players back covering, and allow them to kick pass, but under pressure, and actually go back. This is the way I always find it funny. Before 2011, you'd think the final scores in Gaelic football games were 5-25 to 3-30. There was low scoring games with no dropped defenders, no sweepers, because every man all over the field was pressurising their man. And the ball going in wasn't perfect. Now, I do understand now teams won't kick it as much unless it's perfect. They'll work it through the hands. But is there not something in that?
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you take it back to, say, pre that time, in backs and forwards, if someone got a ball, if the ball was thrown up in the midfield, they'd run it about 50 yards out. If you were inside, the easiest thing in the world would be hand pass the ball to you. There was really no marking that if everybody was in their places. And I think that was the difference back then. As the ball built up, everybody was tackling their own man, basically by and large. So nobody had a free run at it. So that guy was kicking under pressure. So if he managed to get the ball and get inside his man, the cornerback knew the ball was going to be kicked.
Yeah.
So there was such a fight for possession. That's why I think, I've just gone back to Derry, if you look back at that game, the amount of hand passes, as you said, the high percentage pass was going inside, because the guy that's hand passing the ball is maybe has slipped his man or has come off the shoulder. He's under no pressure. He can give a measured ball inside. So you've got a forward with a defender, and all he has to do is break that second. It's his ball. It's his ball all day. So I think that's a big difference. Well, you're right, that no one is actually responsible for the guy that's coming out the pitch, because everybody has dropped back inside, which means the ball is kind of nearly handed to the forward. But yeah, for Tyrone, I think that those sound bites were, Willie and Morty encouraged the boys to keep doing it. I didn't see anything that major about Tyrone's pressure out the pitch. It was just normal Tyrone. You know, they had 8 different players starting from that Mullen by Kerry. Their big thing really, Willie, first 20 minutes, actually, Kevin, give it to them. You know, it was a great game for the first 20.
Yeah.
But they completely faded after that. McCurry gave one of the best performances I've ever seen, you know. And very strange player. He's been in and out of Tyrone. He showed absolute brilliance a few times. And then he hasn't got in. He's walked away from Tyrone. He's been brilliant then in club football. He comes back in. So I thought Saturday was a huge day for him. And boy, did he deliver, you know, as I say, off the bench. You know, Brian Kennedy, a player a lot of people won't know, like, horse of a game, big, huge, strong man. Kilpatrick as well. And those are players, the likes of Colm Cavan around midfield, that Tyrone were maybe missing, and you're waiting for new players to come in. I mean, Frank Burns come on, Bradley comes on, Tiernan McCann, it's the same McShean. So if those players come back from injury, you know, Tyrone are in a fairly good place. That said, Willie, it's going to become, if we're basing it on those two games, you would think, you know, Tyrone are going into this in a much better stage. But when Donegal and Tyrone play each other, it's like the old derby scenario. Everything changes. The form isn't that important. What happens is the 15-on-15 on the pitch. As I say, this last number of years, Donegal have got the better.
Yeah, the Brian Kennedy's an interesting one. He came on, I'd imagine he'll start, and Kilpatrick looked the right player. I was talking to a friend of mine and he's like, this lad's brilliant. He's a brilliant player and he's known to be very, very good. He can score, he can attack, he can fetch, all those things. But, you know, doesn't always commit, and it's apparently to have his head right this year.
Yeah.
I kind of like a lad like that, like a challenge. Let's get this lad right. Yeah. And he's coming at it this year and he's fully committed. So he's a huge plus, like, especially for kickouts, because you can see Niall Morgan, like, you're going with a midfield of Matty Donnelly and Frank Burns. Like, what's Morgan in the goals meant to do? Like, yeah. You know, when that full press is on you, like, you have to have a target to, like, go, right, okay, now take the pressure off me in goals. You fetch it. I'll stick it out there or else win it. You know, like, them having a big midfield like those two lads, it really relieves a lot of pressure on Morgan's, you know, when the press is on.
No, it does. And look, I think that was something that was highlighted on the Sunday game then as well. The fact that Morgan did have that option and probably a bit of confidence to let it go a bit longer to athletic guys well able to win their own ball. And if they don't win it, they're getting a fist on it. It just adds a whole different dimension to the thrown play and thrown kick out, you know.
Obviously, they get possession higher up the field. Mm-hmm. Donegal don't have men back covering. Now you can win a kick out, turn around, kick it in.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Now your kicking game works.
Now it does work, and funny enough, now Mickey Hart were loud just that we played against him. He actually did that as well. Two athletic guys midfield. Slow down the kick out a bit. A lot of balls went long. Opposition were pushing up, trying to force a long kick out. But because he's two athletic guys midfield and centre forward, if they weren't catching it, they were flicking it on. And the odds were, which the odds worked out in his favour, that they were going to win most of the breaks. But you do need to have the personnel out there as well, you know.
Yeah. The one thing about these short kickouts, Brendan, just to mention them quickly, is that every team's doing them. But you have to remember, if you go short to a corner back, you are guaranteed to face a 13 men, because as you're attacking, they'll be drifting. Mm. You know, whereas if a full press is on you, get it long. Like, I mean, and the reality is, I'd like to see the stats on the attack. Say if a corner back goes to a corner back and you're guaranteed to see 13 men, how many scores come off them? Hopefully. And you contrast that off how much you get off your long kickouts, you know, which are seen as 50-50. Yeah. But I'm sure scores off taps to the corner back are 50-50 or worse.
Yeah. Do you know what's got fascinated about, Willie, is the attempt of both teams to stop each other's kickout. I mean, the tactics of that was amazing to watch. I mean, Warren Lynch and Sean Patton were brilliant at it. They got caught a couple of times. But it's almost a mindset, Willie, of giving up that ball. If you go long and you lose it, I think everybody in the team, because so much has been put on the kickouts, yeah, practice, movement, that if they give it away, say you had three long kickouts and you lost the three of them, I think that's a wild psychological defeat to the team that's kicking it out. So nobody, come back to the possession thing we've been talking about, nobody wants to give it away, but the movement, it was fascinating. And then you only had a split second. You've seen that, you know, I suppose it was Cluxon from the start, that one-step kick. And you can still have to put it maybe 50 or 60 over the first line of people and into the wing. But the movement was going on was brilliant. And particularly at the very end of the match, when Donegal squeezed up after McBurdy's free, do you remember? Everybody was right up thinking, don't give him possession. And then the sub would come on. he let the Derry corner back go back and pick it up. Young Gallen come on. I just thought to myself, you know, everybody was like, don't let them make them go long. So that's a real battle that's going on. I think for looking at it, Rory Gallagher obviously knows Donegal's kick-out strategy inside out, because they were such a part of doing it back in the day. So now everybody not only is practicing their own, but is practicing stopping the other teams. But I'm just wondering, like, and Jer, and you would know, Jer, what you did this year. Now, how much time are you putting in to not only practicing your own, but then stopping the other team's kick out, or can you do the two at the one time?
You can, but the quality of it probably isn't as good, Brendan. And given how short the seasons have been, the last half of last season and this season, you've so little time to get any decent work done. So the simplest thing to do on their kick out is probably to play zonally. And force them long, fist it in and get in for the break, and it's as simple as that, you know. But again, on your own kickouts, depending on what style, a play you're looking to probably engage with, Brendan. And again, I know with Dublin, we would have really only worked on our kickouts maybe once a week, where we break up in the backs and forwards. But other than that, it was just all within game situations. But the rule of thumb is, and I think it should be the rule of thumb, is if there's a guy on and he's 20 metres away from the goalkeeper, and there's a guy on and he's 45 metres away from you, try and give it to the guy who's 45 metres away for you to get the thing up there as quick as possible. But then when teams are pushing up on you, you do need to be able to, in the same way, Brendan, that, you know, you obviously play as a full forward. If you get used to playing with someone up there, you know he's making a dummy run for you, and he goes one way and you take up his space for the ball to be kicked in. The same thing happens with the better backs, that they're able to actually make a run off each other. So, you know, myself and Rory O'Carroll used to have a nice little movement the whole time. He'd go one way off the edge of the D, I go the other way. And if he got it, he'd nearly give it back to Clucko, or if I got it, Rory come off the shoulder. If I didn't get it, one of the midfielders would get it in the space I left, and then I might loop around, come off his shoulder, and that's when you're going down the middle channel. But that's a more risky kick pass. But yeah, but it's about working off each other, you know.
So, no, it's definitely, well, like, I mean, yeah. I would say you could spend a completely disproportionate amount on kickouts.
Yeah,
there's, like, I mean, there's, yeah, but there's more important things to be like. I don't even, a lot of the time, even with replays, you don't even notice the kickout. I like the general play. Kickout analysis bores me. Anyway, I've said that before. Come here, we may get predictions on this. We're going to be here all day. What are you calling here, Ger?
God, I don't know. I just because Derry have been given a far greater challenge the last day, I think they're just going to be a bit sharper, battle hardened, and hopefully Murphy is back fit. He'll start, and I'm just going to go with a Donegal win by a point or two. I think Tyrone are still trying to figure out their best team with players coming back as well. And what style of football best suits them, and being able to evolve between what's in front of them. So for me, Donegal by just a point or two, I think.
Brendan?
Yeah, fascinating, very hard to call. Jerry, I just think Donegal, if Murphy starts now and he's okay, that's going to be a huge aspect. But listen, another end of McKenna and Kenneman are back. McShane did look obviously rusty when he came on last day, but still kicked a few scores, and there'll be a handful for that Donegal defence. So if Donegal play tactically shrewd in terms of packing their defence and sorting out what they didn't last week, I'd expect them to come through as well. But just about. But again, while you're on about the modern game, it's all about the bench. Throwing on these five players from the bench the last day that did damage, and eight changes from the team before. So Tyrone have the squad. If it's an energy sapping day, that could come into play as well. So it's on the knife edge. Yeah, it'll be a point either way.
Yeah, I'm the same as that. A very hard one to call. That you can make a strong case for either one. I think because Donegal, a little bit more comfortable in their own skin, and, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them. And they did talk a lot the last day, McFadden, midfield, Declan Bonner, about the character they showed. A lot of times they don't come through games like that, and I think maybe that will have stood to Donegal. Just they're a little bit further down the road than Tyrone, so I'll give a nod to Donegal as well. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back in part three. Okay, lads, we'll have a look at the other three semi-finals, I suppose, in order of interest. Armagh Monaghan, probably the next most interesting one outside of Donegal and Tyrone. A lot of pressure here on Armagh, Ger. Like, I mean, they haven't been in an Ulster final. I'm not talking about winning one. They haven't been in one since 2008. They had a good chance a few years ago there against Cavan, and they made a balls of it. Aaron McKay was talking about that during the week. Said even a few years ago against Cavan, the first drawn game, we threw it away. It was a great opportunity to get to an Ulster final. Like, only Brendan Donaghy and their whole squad has the experience of that. I think they're putting themselves under a lot of pressure to get to one. This is going to be our year.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pressure on probably the management team as well. That's, you know, obviously Kieran has been there for maybe 5 or 6 years longer. That to not have gotten to a final in so long, and to not having gotten over the line, are they in a better place in comparison to previous years gone by? And Kieran Donaghy coming in is obviously adding a different layer to them from an attacking point of view, but. Again, it's another fascinating game, like the other semi-final, in that
two very evenly matched teams,
and it's hard to see who's going to kind of scrape through. Like, Armagh, they made hard work of a fairly well organised Division 4 Antrim team, you know, barred a couple of goals in the latter stage of the second half. You know, it was quite an even game, certainly yeah. The first half. Fermanagh had an easier win there then as well against Fermanagh, so it is fascinating. Both teams are playing a nice style of football. They're trying to kick past the ball quite a bit. It's going to be a very, very close one. But if I was in Kieran McGeaney's shoes, I'd be probably feeling the heat quite a bit now if they don't get over the line.
Oh, definitely. There's no doubt about that. Tony McEntee was talking during the week. He says, Armagh have very good footballers this year, more than any other year. They seem to have a stronger defensive system. It works better and a bit more of a counter-attack style. I wouldn't describe it as a counter-attack style, Brendan, but I was very surprised at how many bodies they were getting back behind the ball against Antrim. And that hadn't been a feature of their play to beat. Look, at the first 4 or 5 minutes was just all Antrim possession with Armagh waiting. That was weird. And then, like, two or three times in the first half, they'll send this huge boomer down, you know, on top of Rian O'Neill or whoever's in there, Jared Oak Burns or Oisin. They keep swapping whoever's in there. And I don't know, is that to confuse the other team or is it to confuse themselves? It's just like, I mean, there's no doubt Monaghan are going to have to leave a sweeper back because they'll be scared of that big long booming one. But if they have a sweeper there, it's kind of, you know, very easy for a sweeper just to pick up the break there.
Yeah, I just think the physical presence inside, you see, of the likes of O'Neill, the two O'Neills are very physical, and I think it's probably, you know, McGeaney's attempt to counteract, like, to get it over a sweeper, and they hit those famous diagonals. But yeah, listen, Armagh are on the way back, will they? But, you know, I think that was their second championship one in Ulster, maybe 6 years. So I don't think they're in the game, you know. We're thinking Armagh, are they back? They held their own Division 1, but Championship's a different animal, as we know. And this Armagh team, I think, had a wee bit of jitters in the first half. That said, I have to commend Enda McGinley. I know Stephen O'Neill's up them too. I mean, for Antrim to play in Division 4 all year, to come out of Division 4 to be competitive for 45 minutes against an Armagh team that's got a lot of plaudits, you'd have to say that was a huge bit of work from them, fair play them. But once Armagh kicked into gear, they have an explosive power, and I think that long ball inside is trying to release a bit of that because there's goals in that team. But certainly what I've seen of Armagh this year, they've got physical presence and power. They bossed Donegal at times in the league game up there. Donegal just wouldn't go away, as we keep seeing with Donegal. But even in that game, Willie, I felt if Armagh had shown a wee bit more ambition, when they were in their lead, I think they were 4 or 5 up in the second half, and they immediately started to sit in. And that's kind of a team that's on its way up, then starts to realise can be sitting this, and they're not capable, they're not ready to play a game like that yet. So I think the best thing for Armagh to do is, of course, listen, protect your defence. But, you know, in Grugan, Campbell, O'Neill, these guys, they've got serious power, and they've got great players off the bench too. So the worst thing they could do, Willie, is to go too defensive against Monaghan. And I think both teams, you know, Monaghan have a brilliant sprinkling of tack as well. I think this could be set up for a cracker, you know. Both teams have interesting backroom selections and different people coming in and out. You know, obviously, Lee Laverty left Monaghan, and Donnelly left in the strength and condition coach. He ended up back at Tyrone. But they brought in a few players like Buckley. Johnny Davis was the fitness guy Monaghan brought in as well. Of course, Donaghy joining Armagh. So both teams are really looking to, I think, ask questions of the squad. And is Gerard Teddy there? In any squad in any year, you know, if you've got a manager in for a few years, and I think this was the scenario with Mickey Hart. Now, he was there a long, long time. But trying to freshen up the training and the voice and just the angle, I think, is vital, because players are you know, it's complete dedication to it. It's not like you're coming on a Tuesday and Thursday and you'll do a bit of tactics and play a few games and then you play a game on a Sunday. It was absolute constant around, you know, your own tactics, analysis of the opposition. And it's never ending. So I think having the right people with the right voices in, and that's why you've just seen a wee bit of an uptick from Monaghan and Armagh. They both survived the relegation playoffs in different ways. I think Armagh controlled theirs completely, and Monaghan just about seen off Galway. So everything's set up. Well, I suppose the best thing about it is it's competitive championship, which we'll get excited about. I mean, it's a brilliant game. On the weekend, Donegal and Derry. I think these two games, there'll be nothing in them, and if the tension's like it was on Sunday in particular, it was gut churning. But you know, that's a good thing in sport, because we've just seen so many teams blow all their runs away. So I think it's set up for a cracking encounter between the two sides.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I think if Armagh go a bit too defensive against Monaghan, it'll be a mistake. Monaghan looked very, very comfortable against Fermanagh, just working it through the hands. They eventually worked a goal, a lovely little ball. Carl O'Connell, McInnesby, O'Hanlon, all these lads have pace. And if you're just gifting, like allowing them possession on the outside of you, they will get through you. So I'd be surprised if Armagh, I'm not sure why they did it against Antrim. Anyways, I would be surprised if they do that. I think this could potentially be a very good game. If they put, I don't know, like, I mean, you have these hopes for these games and then maybe they go a different way. I don't think Monaghan will go overly defensive, but I'd be just a little bit worried that Armagh have gone that direction a little bit this year.
And in fairness to Monaghan, you know, their ability to run it through the hands and through the lines and get inside was obvious to see the weekend, but
yeah, and their movement's great. They're flyers. Like, I mean, you won't keep them down.
No, you won't. But they were also able to kick it over the top as well. They hit a few lovely long distance scores in as well. So you know, they've a couple of different things in their armory. The only thing I can think of in Armagh's point of view is that they felt like they'd have to play one quarter playing defensive just to see what it looks like, just to practice it in case they need to go to it. And maybe they took a decision to do that in the first quarter against Antrim last day.
Actually, just on that, Kieran McKeever has been a pundit on this show on a few different occasions, and he was always talking about how Dublin slow the game down, take the sting out of it, get a rest by dropping players back. Mm. And you would just wonder if maybe a bit of his influence in that.
Yeah, and there's truth in that as well.
I don't think they needed a rest for the first 4 minutes now, but maybe they're just taking an initial sting out of the game or something.
Yeah, it's just probably taking the sting out of the game, trying something new. There's less risk when you try it in the first quarter because you've whatever, 3 quarters remaining to make amends if things didn't work out for you. But it's probably something that they maybe had to look at, and given the forward personnel that they have, I think it's 7 or 8 different scorers, maybe Armagh, no more than Monaghan as well, across their team. So they were comfortable when they needed to push on, they were able to push on, and that different level of conditioning, the latter stages of the game, playing at a higher division, obviously shone through then as well, if they were able to power through and create those goal opportunities like they did. But again, 2 evenly matched teams, I think it'll be far less defensive than what we've seen in the likes of Derry's Donegal. And again, the both games are usually exciting. As well as in Ulster, you know, there's a real competitive balance there between the four squads, you know.
There definitely is. Ryan Kennedy and Aidan Forker are back for Armagh. Looks like they're going to be back. You'd imagine they'll pick up McManus and McCarron inside. Maybe Macklin will go out to the half back line. An interesting one here is Rian O'Neill, Brennan, probably plays centre half forward, and like, I mean, he'll be picked up by Desi Ward. He's Monaghan's new go to. It's a very kind of an attacking half back line of Carl O'Connell, McInnesby and Desi Ward. But like, I mean, it's just a tactic and thing. Like, if you're being man marked from centre half back or from centre half forward, you can really do what you like. You can drag him everywhere, leave the whole middle open. I would imagine Armagh are looking at this. Look, Desi Ward is going to be man marking you, Rian. I want you breaking to the wing every single kick out, and I want that kick out going straight down onto the number 11 for Jarlad O'Byrnes or one of the midfielders to Oisín O'Neill to break onto down into that space. I can imagine their team talk centering around. There's one thing being man-marked in the corner, one thing being man-marked on the wing, but a centre-half-back man-marking you is a gaping hole and is something that has to be taken advantage of.
Yeah. And listen, I think Rian O'Neill's got all the skills of one of the best footballers there is about. You know, he's such ability, and the physical side of it too, Willie, is massive, you know, and his ability to kick long-range frees is routinely huge. You know, you think, sometimes you don't notice it in games where a team will get a free and it could be 50 yards out and it's just hit short. You don't notice it. Somebody like him can put the ball down and actually put it over the bar. And you know, you're on about tight games. Like that, his free taking could decide this. But certainly for kickouts, yeah. I think the two of them, the physical play inside between them, again, it's a throwback to the old glory days of Armagh. You know, that crossfield passing and how they used to try and open up the play. So listen, it's McGeady in there. It's good shades of that. But I do enjoy his team talk. Like I spoke to him up in the Athletic Grounds earlier in the year. And, you know, you can just see he's got that kind of no-nonsense kind of mantra. You know, you work hard, you do your thing. But he's very relaxed about it, you know, and he's been on a, I'm not going to say journey, but he's at some mission there, pulling Armagh back to where they were. And listen, from a time when we seriously disliked Armagh, and then, they went away and they ended up in Division 3. Now they're back again, Willie. And what I noticed up there, Willie, that day was up was you talk about the crowd again, the buzz of the Armagh fans. They have been denied, you know, good days out for so long, and the attitude, it was massive what they were bringing the game that day, the 400-500 was in. So I think that the buzz behind Armagh is massive now. And if they had played Monaghan in the last couple of seasons, don't forget Monaghan haven't been in the Ulster final since 2015. They were one of the big three in Ulster, but that hasn't happened. They've been taken out by everybody, by Down, by Cavan twice. So they're coming in this championship now. You talk about a team that wants to unearth some talent. We keep on about the unearthing, you know, likes of Mulligan and Bannigan, Lavelle, and these guys have given a great injection in the Monaghan, and along with the new trainer out there. They're coming in on a completely different curve. So I think if Armagh had played them last year, the year before, I think Armagh would have won the game. As it stands, you know, Monaghan have shown enough in the league there to say that they've got packing a serious punch. It's a fast play, and they're smaller, and they're nowhere near as physical as Armagh. They're going to play the ball through the hands off the shoulder and come at pace, trying to open up the Armagh defence. And you're right about kickouts. I mean, Armagh are on a different physical level to them, and that's a big gap that Monaghan's going to have to bridge to stop them dominating that kind of aerial area. And if I was Armagh, certainly I would be looking to go long in those kicks.
Very quick prediction, Jared.
Well, probably Armagh.
Just like the points,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Brendan?
Again, yeah, I'll go with you. I just think they're going to get a couple of goals, maybe over and above, and that might do them. But again, Willie, on a knife edge, you don't go either way, but slight tip to Armagh.
Yeah, I'm going slightly to Armagh as well. I've kind of tipped Armagh left field Ulster title winners, but at the closer I get to this game, the more I think about it, I'm wondering. I was going to tip Monaghan actually until I remembered I tipped Armagh. So how can I tip against my tip? So like, I mean, that's where tips will get you. Leinster Championship, lads, we'll have to be a bit quicker on this. Dublin against Meath. I don't know. Some people giving Meath a chance here. I don't know what they're basing this on. Like, I mean, they've been destroyed by Dublin the last 2 years. There's a lot of people, like people are, I think, basing it on, you know, the Cluxton thing, the Lowndes. They have a bit of a defensive crisis. Merchant's injured. McDade is injured. But you look against Wexford, they just put James McCarthy wing back and Brian Howard centre back. And then they were able to bring in somebody into the... Dean Rock is back into the forwards. So, like, I mean, they're not any... And Okafig Byrne, the big midfielder, the giant, is into midfield. For me, they don't look any weaker, Ger.
They're probably weaker in terms of quality and experience, right? But it is what it is. New fellas coming in, fellas got injured. But in terms of athleticism, fellas are still...
Fitzsimons, Byrne, McCarthy, Howard, Fenton, Kilkenny, yeah. Conn, Dean Rock.
At some teams.
They're all right for experience.
Yeah,
too.
And Evan Comerford in goal is very rock solid as well, in fairness to him, you know. But probably the difference between Mead and Dublin this year versus last year is that there was a lot more expected of Mead. I think Meath are probably coming in under the radar a small bit now. There's less pressure on them. They pushed for Division 1 promotion. They just lost out, I think, maybe a goal or that's a clear. And they had a good outing in their first championship game, so they'd be fairly happy with where they are and what they've done. But because there's no pressure on them, Andy McEntee will be just saying, lads, go out.
They've lost their last two games against Dublin Championship now by an average margin of 16 points.
By a rake of points, yeah. So 16, is it? So if I was Meath, I would be looking at what Wexford did. I think Meath have better, they do have better attack options than what Wexford currently have. And if Meath can hold Dublin in the same way that Wexford did, I think they will be given opportunities to their end. But at the same time, it's very hard to see any other results other than Dublin winning by probably double digits. But Dublin's, again, lackluster performance against Wexford. Some of the individual performances, the likes of even Fento against Kerry, that's uncharacteristic bad pass, the lateral pass in the middle of the pitch that resulted in Kerry getting the equalising goal. All of those different things coming together, you know, as a group, they're not in as good a position as they would like to be, which is no harm too, because you do have something to work towards. But Dublin will win, but I don't think they're going to have it all their own way like the previous two meetings that you described.
Well, like, I mean, we know about Meath. We know what they're good at. They have a decent defence. Like, they got a lot of change, a lot of scores. Their half-back line scored 2-3 the last day. Keoghan was in cornerback. McGill is going to be back this weekend, and they've Lavin in the corner. We know they have a good defence. The problem with Meath is, Brendan, is that they have they're a small little team. They have a small forward line, and they have to play a running game against Dublin, and they'll play leave two up, and there'll be no connection between the two and everyone else, and they'll have to run the ball through the middle third. And we've seen much better teams than Meath getting gobbled up by Dublin with this kind of thing. And I'm not criticising Andy McEntee, because they don't have the players to probably play any other way. Mm-hmm. I just can't see Meath, unless they can start unearthing some forwards with some sort of physical size and presence, I can't see them ever troubling Dublin.
Yeah. Well, listen, Newman would be a bit of a handful inside. You know what I mean? He can mix it. But, yeah, we're making a case here against Dublin. You watch now at Croke Park, the destruction that they're going to bring to this. Because all we're doing is giving the plaudits all the time. Now they've got criticised everywhere. Players' attitude has been questioned. The squad's been questioned, right? What do you love as a manager? What do you love, Jerry? You love backs to the wall, right? You can be sure now you're training, they're saying, here, they're thinking you don't care anymore. They're saying they're writing you off. They're thinking that a Wexford performance means that Meath are going to catch up. They're going to catch you. You're going to get beat. You're going to lose your crown. I mean, what more fuel do you want? I mean, Molly, you listed off those players.
Yeah.
Give them players a bit of fuel and good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on about Meath, a potential upset. The whole thing with Meath and everybody in Leinster is trying to claw back the deficit. Listen, if Meath came out of this game under 10 points, I would say, hats off to you. Well done. That's an improvement. Do you have any thought that Meath can get near Dublin now? It's crazy. And if anything, the very fact that we're questioning it now, I would say Andy McAtee's going, here, lads, just let us go on and play this match. Because if Dublin gets stuck, well, listen, everybody sees outlets, they see the news. Desi Farrell will be using that rhetoric to fire them up and... God help who's on the end of it. It's going to be Meath this weekend.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I don't know whether Desi might use it or not. I don't think that's the Dublin way, but the players will be using it individually and go, here, this is bullshit. I could see a backlash in Croke Park, obviously, against Meath this weekend. I can see Meath getting a scutcheon for themselves this weekend.
You need something to motivate you going into every game. And I've mentioned before, different things motivate different people. And the way... Dublin's trajectory over the last, since 2011, is all about continuous improvement game to game, and that's what it's all about. But you do need that bit of frustration or that bit of something like Brendan's talking about there, where these feckers are starting to doubt us, like, let's prove them wrong. And I know there's enough of the lads I played with still involved that they think that way, and they've always thought that way, regardless of the whole continuous improvement mantra, and they will be aware of it. They'll be told at home. Yeah. I know John McCarthy, James
McCarthy. He's the name that popped into my head. He'll be frothing at the mouth. You can be sure that
James' dad will torment him all week, saying you can't lose to these Meath fuckers. And excuse me, language. All due respect to me, but that's the rivalry that John had with them. And good lads, the Meath lads. But it will transfer to the field. But as a group, they're not where they have been. But sure, they've been on such a high the whole time. It's hard to kind of remain up there, but Meath aren't going to be the team to knock them off, but Dublin need to bring a better attitude and a better understanding or fluidity to their play the weekend, because there are bigger tests ahead.
Yeah, no, I think they need to click into form. We'll all go for Dublin in this one. As the last one then is Kildare and Westmeath. This is in Croke Park at 2 o'clock, part of a doubleheader. Very evenly matched teams again. Like, you can see a lot about Armagh Monaghan here, Kildare, Westmeath. There is a bit of a contrast in styles. Like, I mean, Kildare are more of a kicking team. They like to get it down. They like to break with kick passes. They'll get a few bodies back behind the ball, but nothing major. They like to leave a few up there. Westmeath are a more defensive team. As we know, Jack Cooney spent some time on Rory Gallagher's coaching ticket up in Donegal. So I'd say, like, you know, that all filtered in. But, like, they have some good forwards as well. Canellan played in the forwards last day. Jerry Egan and Heslin are very, very top-level forwards. I just think Kildare have the better forwards. They've Ben McCormack, Jimmy Hyland, Dara Carwin, Neil Flynn. Daniel Flynn is going to be back fit. They've a lot more firepower probably than Westmeath. I think it's probably going to be a case of, you know, who, without breaking it down too simplistic, like, I mean, if you've got more firepower and you can break even probably around midfield, I think Kildare shade the midfield, more than shade it with Feely in midfield for fetches. They can get more ball higher up the field, use their forwards better, and I don't think Westmeath have that guaranteed possession, and that's why I'm shading it towards Kildare.
Yeah, and I'd agree with you, but it does come with a bit of a disclaimer. It was the December or the January before COVID kicked in, we played against Westmeath in a challenge with the college, and good chat with Jack Cooney and after the game, and Westmeath were miles off it against an average UCD team that we had out at the time. But the work that he's obviously put in behind the scenes has obviously been second to none, and to get them to where he has been now was obviously brilliant. But for me, I know, and the more than Brendan knowing the Ulster guys a bit better, I know a lot of the Westmeath guys and the Kildare guys particularly well through the colleges and playing against some of them still. Kildare have a tendency to lick themselves after a good performance, and they've had a couple of good performances, obviously beating me to get promoted. Their last outing, they only pulled away, awfully, they only pulled away, in fairness. That, again, bit of athleticism, and I think I called it the week before, I know I got some other results wrong, but I called that one that Offaly was just an extra game without getting a breather, and they'd get found out eventually. But Kildare, nice lads, but in their heads, they may think they're better than what they are, and that's where they might get caught against Westmeath. But Jack O'Connor, obviously, with the wealth of experience he brings and the history of Kerry managers with Kildare, is obviously with Mikko and that, brings its own story. So I'm intrigued to see, can Kildare put together three back-to-back performances in Meath in the league promotion?
It was a promotion game. Yeah,
the promotion game awfully last week, and now a fairly strong Westmeath team. It was Westmeath, sorry, who set up from the relegation. So but just about Kildare, but reluctantly. So it's going to be intriguing.
Yeah, I'm going just about Kildare here as well, just based on having the Kevin Feely, who's much better in midfield than either of the anything Westmeath have, and would probably guarantee them some possession. I think Fergal Conway will be able to pick up James Dolan, who's a huge threat from the halfback line from Westmeath. Like, Westmeath are going very well this year, and apparently all the noise I hear coming out of Westmeath is a brilliant setup and a really, really good structure, and, you know, they're able to destroy Leash, which maybe wasn't at that level. I'm going for a Kildare win just about. Brendan, what do you think?
Yeah, same. Well, there's a great vibe coming out of Westmeath, and Cooney obviously learned his setup and his tactics up here with us Northern boys. So I think he's going to make Westmeath hard to beat, but players seem to be enjoying it. I could just never figure Kildare out. I'm just wondering, Jack O'Connor come from the older school of football there. Are they tactically on it enough to deal with a well set up team? This is set up for a great game too. Fascinated to know how the managers line up their teams. There's no doubt Cooney has learned to do it in a very rhythmic way. And if players are enjoying their football, they're going out and giving it a lash. Westmeath do seem to be on the way up, and there's still question marks about where exactly Kildare are at. I know they had a couple of championship ones there, but you were expected they won those games. But this is a real teller. Good luck. A Leinster final, that's as good as it can get for anybody outside the Dubs, I guess.
And Jack O'Connor, he obviously spoke during the season that he prefers playing out of St Conleth Park in Newbridge because it's too tight. If you've ever played there, it's a tight pitch, right? And it's obviously now they're playing in Croke Park. Big open expanses. But if Westmeath, like Brendan touched on, if they clog up their defence a bit and Kildare can only play the kicking game, will they be able to adapt on the field? You know, have to be given the opportunity and the space to play it as they see it, as opposed to the old style kicking game. It'll be interesting to see, you know.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. They played well against Cork. They beat Cork and Thurles, which is an open pitch as well. So I do think the big thing, I keep talking about this point, if Feely can guarantee them possession in midfield, they have that forward ball to kick on, and then they can make the most out of their better forwards, let's be honest. So, I mean, you can imagine Kildare will be going to midfield an awful lot.
Do Westmeath concede the kick out, I wonder?
Well, there you go. That would be the solution, for Westmeath.
Yeah. Listen, the game is close, yeah.
We'll know all on Monday morning.
Yeah.
We'll be back. We'll review all the weekend's football on Monday, and we'll talk to you all then. Thanks, lads. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I've been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, you have no fucking jurisdiction up here.